Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Approximately 415,000 Utahns and one in six Utah children are at risk of missing a meal today. This equates to 12% of the state's population. Through generous donations of food, time, and money last year, the Utah Food Bank was able to distribute just over 65.5 million pounds of food, the equivalent of 54.6 million meals to Utahns facing hunger statewide. Today we're going to be talking with Utah Food Bank President and CEO Jeanette Bott. We'll talk about food insecurity, the hunger cliff, services Utah Food Bank provides, and how you can help. So we welcome in Jeanette Bott. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Appreciate everything Utah Food Bank does. Later on in the program, we talk about a partnership that Utah Public Radio has, sending boxes of cereal to the Utah Food Bank. I want to maybe to start a little bit later on the program. We'll talk about how Utah Food Bank works and a lot of the services that you have, and of course how people can help. I want to start with food insecurity. How do you define that phrase?
Food insecurity occurs when an individual doesn't know where their next meal is coming from. So that means the family could be put in a situation where they would have meals twice a day, but what are they going to do for dinner? And it can't necessarily impact them just one day. It tends to cover multiple days and long periods of time.
So what causes this?
Well, it's a variety of things. As we look at all the things that family budgets are required to cover, really since COVID days, families have been struggling from a financial perspective. Rents have been increasing. Price of food with inflation has gone up. Gasoline and transportation has increased. Child care is not affordable. And then we have medical issues. So the list goes on and on of things that people address with their budget dollars monthly. And it seems like food continues to fall down to the bottom of the list.
So I was reading a little thing from Feeding America on food insecurity, and I hadn't gone to the next part, the effects of food insecurity, obviously physical health, right?
Well, physical health is absolutely first and foremost, especially when we look at our children. You know, kids go to school hungry. They're not feeling well. You know, their behavior changes. They don't have the capacity to focus. They aren't learning. They become a problem in the classroom sometimes because of their physical behavior. And so many of those things just tie right back to the fact that they're simply hungry. Our seniors who are really in a situation where their diets might be more specific, their transportation might be more limited. There are issues with them not having a group of people around them who can support them, and they're kind of on their own. So there are many, many things that really will ripple, if you will, from food security to endangering the quality of life for people around us.
So mental health, obviously, right? There's going to be effects of food insecurity on mental health.
Well, absolutely, because there are so many issues that can impact an individual or a family from the issues of mental health. A lot of time we will see our friends in the community who are homeless, who are struggling not only from physical ailments, but also with mental health issues, which means then those problems are compounded. The problems are huge and they're hard to really kind of wrap your arms around with trying to determine a way to fix them.
You mentioned school, but I guess this would affect work as well. A lot of people go hungry to work, right? And that's going to affect you.
You know, I think it's absolutely right, because a lot of times as we look at the price and cost of things around us, someone who's working may not have the money to go for an afternoon lunch break and go, even if it's a drive-through scenario, it could be, you know, $10, $12. People aren't going to have that. So they're simply skipping meals, which then, to your point, comes right back to the quality of work they're able to do.
I'm going to quote you here. I was reading an article. You said, I can't look at you and tell that you're hungry. Right. And you also said, regardless of the look of the neighborhood or the feel of the neighborhood, hunger is there. Something you can't necessarily tell if someone is food insecure or hungry.
It's really difficult to know that. And, you know, we find it's a little bit easier to determine with children because of their outward behavior, you know, and teachers are incredible at using their ability to determine if that's the child's problem or issue, but it's much more difficult with adults. It really is hard for me to see that you might be struggling and that you haven't, I don't know that you haven't eaten for a couple of days. It really makes it hard for employers, for friends, for people around people who are struggling with this, if the person doesn't speak up and say, I need some help.
But of course, I read those statistics, and that comes from you, from the Utah Food Bank. 415,000 Utahns, one in six Utah children are experiencing food insecurity. And it seems like the problem's growing, is it?
You know, over the years, it's changed as the economics around us change. But the part that I think is so frightening and very disturbing is children should, well, no one should be hungry in this day and age. There's lots of food. There's lots of product. How do we find better ways to get that product to those who are struggling?
So I'd like to have you tell me about ALICE, not a person, but this is an acronym, right? Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed, right? And I guess this highlights that some of us maybe have a stereotype. Homeless person maybe is, you know, food insecure. But many people have a job, right? They just can't make ends fully meet.
Well, we talk a lot about the goal is to help people who are struggling to get them in a scenario where they can be self-resilient and they can work. You know, people will say, well, folks struggling with hunger should just work harder. How do we know that they're not working as hard as they can? They have a job. They're trying to. Most of the families that we serve, the adults in the home are working two and three jobs. How much more can they work? It's a difficult time to stretch the dollars that a family has to cover the costs that are being demanded of them.
So, many families are above the poverty line, right? Above the line where they could get SNAP benefits, et cetera. I'm reading from the Utah Food Bank. In 2024, 38% of Utah households fall below the ALICE threshold, that asset limited and income constrained employed, highlighting the persistent struggle for financial stability. And at that kind of that gap, you may not qualify for food stamps, et cetera.
Exactly. And those are the families that we really see struggling. And perhaps they did qualify and they were able to get by. And then something changed for them and their employment and they received a promotion or a raise. And that additional income then eliminated them from being eligible for these benefits. So they lose a lot of the support they had. So now they're on their own. Now they're trying to do all of it by themselves. And again, we're back to that same scenario. Food falls to the bottom of the budget that they're trying to cover.
So we hear about this phrase, the hunger cliff. So this refers to when food assistance, you know, federal or other programs maybe suddenly stop. We had this, I think, back when COVID aid ended. Right. And I think we're facing maybe some potential cuts coming in the future.
Well, there are some cuts coming and some of them will be occurring over the course of the next 2 to 3 years, or some could be more immediate with a government closure. But that's the frightening part, is there are so many people that are dependent on the benefits they're receiving to help fill that gap with food. What happens when that goes away? Who then is responsible to fill in the needed food? Who takes care of those folks? Who should be able to do it? If you look at groups like the Utah Food Bank or the partner agencies across the state that we serve, the bandwidth can only go so far. If a pantry is not large in physical space, it can only house or store so much inventory. The infrastructure isn't as strong. Most of those small pantries are run by volunteers. Those groups can't be expected to take on an abundance of additional clients. For those of us who are serving those pantries, we only get so much food in. What comes in goes out. If we aren't able to acquire more product, we can't push the product through. It's a really vicious cycle that we're facing, and it's really frightening.
I think that illustrates a good point you just made. Who else is going to help, right? People are going to look to the Utah Food Bank, right? To their local food pantries. And I guess up to us, right? We got to increase donations.
Exactly. And, there are pantry structures in communities that are aside from Utah Food Bank. There are pantries in schools. There are pantries in a lot of locations that are not necessarily a Utah Food Bank partner agency. But the fact of the matter remains the same. They're still limited in size. They're limited in product they can handle. They're limited in hours they can be open to supply the product. And you're right, it is us. It's all of us, whether it's a Utah Food Bank affiliate, whether it's a pantry at an organization, or individuals who we're asking to donate. We all have to be part of the solution. We just need to take care of those who are around us.
That's probably a good way to transition into a partnership that UPR is doing during our fall fund drive. We're partnering with Post Consumer Brands and with the Utah Food Bank to try to help join forces here. So I'm bringing Emily Colby here.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Great to be with you. Utah Public Radio, during our fall drive, we've partnered with Post Consumer Brands, and they are going to do what?
They are going to donate 2 boxes of cereal to the Utah Food Bank for every donation Utah Public Radio receives this drive. And they've offered up to 1,000 boxes, so we're hoping to get 500 donations, take advantage of as many of those boxes as possible to send to the Utah Food Bank and feed our hungry people in our community.
So that's a great opportunity. Your donation in any amount to Utah Public Radio will send 2 boxes of cereal to Utah Food Bank to distribute to hungry families. So we hope that you'll give to support Utah Public Radio, especially in this post-rescission time, right, where we've lost $200,000 in federal funding. That's $200,000 a year that we have to make up.
Yeah, and that's in addition to the fundraising we were doing before. So if you've been giving to Utah Public Radio for some time, now's a good time to maybe consider increasing a little bit. Or if you've never given before, we know that's most of you listening right now, now is the perfect time. We'd love to have you come on board. Give now at 800-826-1495 or upr.org. Make that donation today, and you can feel good knowing you're doing 2 good deeds with that donation, feeding hungry people and supporting Utah Public Radio.
Jeanette Butt, I want to, I've been reading up some things you've said. I'll quote you back to yourself here again. You say there's so many great nonprofits in the state of Utah, and we're all asking for the same dollar. So we have to be strategic, right? So this is one way, at least Utah Public Radio, Post Consumer Brands, Utah Food Bank is trying to join forces here.
Well, partnerships are absolutely crucial. They're crucial to the success of the individual organizations that come together. They are crucial to those who are benefiting from the product or the funds that we are raising collectively. But it also comes together as a very good educational opportunity for those of your listeners who may not be recipients of these products, but who have the capacity to give, whether those dollars come to you, whether they come to the food bank, whether they go to help animals. Whatever your choice of giving is, it's really, really important that people recognize whatever they give makes a huge difference to the recipient on the other end.
So again, 800-826-1495 is the phone number to call, or upr.org. Your donation, any amount right now to Utah Public Radio, helps not only Utah Public Radio, but the Utah Food Bank and the families that they serve.
You heard Jeanette. These donations make a huge difference. And even when it feels like a small amount to you, whatever fits in your budget, those small amounts add up for organizations like Utah Public Radio. We are able to come together, all of us, and it's not something just one person has to do. It's something we do as a community. But if you're able to provide this service, Utah Public Radio, for people who can't afford to pay right now, if you're able to help feed hungry people, for people who can't do that themselves right now, that is such a powerful act that you can feel good about. You know, that generosity will make you feel better. You can give now, 800-826-1495 or upr.org. Make that donation today.
upr.org or 800-826-1495. Jeanette Bott, of course, we were encouraging people, first of all, give to upr.org. Send the money to UPR, and that will cause those boxes of cereal from Post Consumer Brands to go to Utah Food Bank. So take care of that first, but then maybe people want to give an additional donation directly to Utah Food Bank. How do you do that?
You know, here at the Utah Food Bank, people always hear me ask for three things: food, time, or money. We need all three of those. You know, food comes to us from donations, whether they're food drives, whether it's someone shopping in the grocery store, buying extra product, leaving it there at the barrel, someone coming here and dropping off donations. The food that comes from your house is exactly what another family would enjoy, just as your family does. The food part too also gives a family the opportunity to educate the kids. Go to the grocery store, take the kids shopping, let them select the products from the shelves that are their favorite, and then talk with them as they give that food away and help them understand who they're helping and the issues of hunger. So educationally giving food is huge. Volunteer time coming to help us is incredible. We always need extra hands and extra hearts to do what we have to do. And of course, like any entity, the money that comes to us, we work so diligently to be good stewards of those dollars, to stretch your dollar as far as we can, to make sure the majority of that dollar is going to programming. So, you know, that's when I refer to good nonprofits in the state of Utah. We're all trying to do the same thing. We're trying to do our job the best we can. And we need support from those who can help us. You know, a one-time donation is incredible. A monthly donation that would cover the course of the year for your organization or mine or any nonprofit is a great way for a listener to set up an account and do that to help. So for us, it's food, time, or money. And the great part about you and I having this conversation today, we're seeing two nonprofits coming together, working towards one general solution to a huge problem we're experiencing.
Yeah, it is a great thing. We appreciate all the great work that you do, and appreciate Post Consumer Brands for kicking in boxes of cereal. They're national, but they're also local. They have a plant in Tremonton, so we appreciate the good work that they do as well. Let's take a brief break. We'll be back talk much more with Jeanette Bott, who's president and CEO of the Utah Food Bank. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Jeanette Bott, who is president and CEO of Utah Food Bank. We're talking about food insecurity, the hunger cliff, services Utah Food Bank provides, and how you can help. Again, I'll say those statistics that we got from Utah Food Bank. 415,000 Utahns, 1 in 6 Utah children are at risk of missing a meal today. That equates to 12% of the state's population. Jeanette Bott, before we jump into talking about how Utah Food Bank works, I heard a couple of days ago, this is anecdotal, no reason to doubt it, though. People may or may not know that university campuses have food insecurity problems, right? Students have some of these problems. And so the USU Food Pantry, they call it the Student Nutrition Access Center, or SNAC. What I heard was the demands upon its services were the highest they've ever been this past month or two, just illustrating that this problem is increasing, not decreasing.
It is increasing. And, you know, our college student population is one that we've always joked about. You know, when you go to school and, you know, you're studying and you're living on top ramen, and, you know, we've all experienced that. Well, now it's a more serious problem because sometimes the top ramen isn't even affordable. So as we have worked with universities the length of our state, you will see that most of the colleges and universities do have a food pantry on campus. It does give the students an opportunity to be able to focus on acquiring the food they need and being able to pay what they need to pay for their school, whether it's tuition or whatever the expense is. But every major college and university across the state, for the most part, has a pantry that really has made a difference in the lives of many students.
So let's get into talking about the Utah Food Bank in specific. What's the mission of Utah Food Bank?
So our mission statement's very simple. It's fighting hunger statewide. You know, the Utah Food Bank started in 1904. We're 120 plus years old, and we've been at this for a very long time. But interestingly enough, we've learned over the years that we can't do it from one location, that it has to be done throughout the state, and the food has to be placed in the regions or neighborhoods where folks are in need. So through that, and with our affiliation with Feeding America, we have been assigned the state of Utah for the area that we're responsible for. So under the guise of our responsibility, we have almost 300 pantries that we utilize throughout the state that we deliver product to. Those pantries then are the touch points for people in the communities. They're in Logan. Cache Valley Pantry is an incredible partner and a great pantry, and they've been around for a very long time. They do an awesome job for those who are in need in your area. And that's just one example of what we have in every of the 29 counties. We're serving all counties. For counties who don't have a brick and mortar pantry, we use a mobile process. We'll go into an area with a truck and do a distribution. And also in those rural communities, in some areas, we've had to build pantries that Utah Food Bank takes care of. We have two on the Navajo Nation. We have one in Blanding, and we have one in Hurricane. So we're trying to use as many opportunities for distribution that are positive and get to the families to be as efficient as we can be.
So you mentioned all 29 counties. I guess there's a need in all 29 counties.
Well, there certainly is in all 29 counties, and some counties more so than others. You know, San Juan County has been the one that really struggles with just geographically folks being so far away from services. Since we've been able to put a distribution center and the three pantries in San Juan County, we find now we're helping about 62% of that county. So the numbers are very, very high, and I don't think people realize that.
You're a part of nationally, you're Feeding America affiliate. There's a network nationwide.
We are. Feeding America is kind of the overall umbrella organization for 200 food banks across the country. We belong to that association, as do those other 199 groups. And it does a lot of things for us. It gives us the opportunity to be partnered with food banks that are our size or have the same geographic area that we serve. We do a lot of best practices back and forth. We share inventory when we can. We do a lot of opportunities that would be maybe not beneficial to a larger food bank. So by narrowing it down and having the focus be groups that are our same size, it becomes very effective. But with that then gives us the opportunity to utilize, you know, the government relations team of Feeding America, who is in Washington, D.C., and has a much better ability to access issues of advocacy than each of us can. And so things like that that we don't have to put in place because it's in place for us allows us to address what we do best, and that's feeding people.
Mm. Can anyone access the local food pantry?
Absolutely. A food pantry is a spot where anyone can go. We use a process called self-declaration. You're asked a couple of questions when you sign in about your income level. We don't ask for addresses. We don't ask for Social Security cards. We don't ask for proof of employment. We simply ask you how many people are in your family, how many of those people are under 18, so we know how many kids we're helping. And then based on the size of your family, you're allowed to go through the pantry, almost like a grocery store, select from the product that your family would utilize and the quantity that's appropriate for the size of your family. And then each of the pantries have the ability to set their own schedule. They may not be open every day. Maybe it's every other day. And perhaps you as an individual can come to that pantry once a month. Maybe it's twice a month. It depends on what the pantry can serve in their community. But if you are unsure where to get help, if you call 211, it's a toll-free number, give them your zip code. By utilizing that zip code, the folks at 211 can tell you the closest pantry to you, but it also then can tell you other services in your area that you might be available to utilize. And so it's really easy because it keeps you right in your neighborhood where the services are located, and it makes it easy for people to find help for many, many issues versus just food.
I know some people, I've talked to some people, again, this is anecdotal. Some people might feel a stigma, right? Man, I've never had to go to the food pantry before. Now I got to go, right? Want to go in the dark of night. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
It's interesting, during the course of COVID, which was a lesson that none of us want to repeat, we found many, many people in our states were coming to us who had never had to have help before. And we referred to them as first timers. They were folks who had never had to reach out for this kind of support for their families. We need people to know that coming to a food pantry is something that we really value as an opportunity to help. It's important to us that those who are coming experience dignity. We don't want it to be uncomfortable. We don't want you to be embarrassed. We don't want you to feel like you shouldn't be here, because you should. We make it as easy as we can and as pleasant and safe and clean as we can for those individuals who come to a pantry.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, probably a good attitude is you can help, you can give when you can. And then if you need to receive, then you receive, right?
And it's so interesting because so many of the people we help, when they do get back on their feet and they are in a position that's different for them financially, they will, in fact, always come back with a donation and a story. And the story always contains a heartfelt thank you. You were there when I needed the help. Here's my donation. It might be $5 or $10 or $20. They're doing what they can, but they're making it so that other people can take advantage of that same help and that same service in the future.
Mm. If you just joined us, we're talking with Jeanette Bott, who is present CEO of the Utah Food Bank. Utah Food Bank has a statewide network of 270 partner agencies that consists of emergency food pantries. We've been talking about that. Rehab facilities, shelters, school pantries, and places such as soup kitchens. Maybe talk a bit about it, but the broad range of that network.
There are all different sorts of kinds of services that are pertinent to food. You know, I think we first tend to think of the pantry in your neighborhood that you can go to for immediate help. The homeless population is handled a little bit differently because a lot of the shelters will have kitchens in there or they have arrangements made for meals to be provided. We also see a lot of our kids who are in a situation where they're utilizing after-school programs in lieu of daycare. So a lot of our schools will qualify for what we call Kids Cafe. That's a program where we utilize the opportunity to prepare a meal and take it to this after-school location. So the children that are there will receive dinner. A lot of kids sometimes who are not in these programs will hear from them that they eat breakfast and lunch at school, and then they don't eat again till the following day. If they're in an after-school program and we can provide dinner for them, it makes a huge difference to them and to the family. And last year, we served over 441,000 meals in the evening to kids throughout our state. Those can be in schools, they could be at a cultural center, or even serving meals in public libraries. Libraries were being utilized in lieu of daycare by families, and the kids were there because it was safe and it was warm. The library system reached out and said, "We have all these kids, we can't feed them, can you help?" So 11 libraries received meals Monday through Friday in the afternoon for those kids. So we're being as creative and as aggressive as we can in trying to get extra services other than just a pantry to folks.
I think it was a good segue from there to the summer gap. I'm not sure exactly what you call it, but you know, a lot of kids are dependent on the school meals are provided through the school, and then you go off for the summer. And I think Utah Food Bank tries to help there.
We do, and we're only one of many, many organizations that participate in the summer feeding program. And that is, you know, a lot of schools, foundations of schools, other organizations like the Utah Food Bank will go into communities. We're assigned certain areas so there's no overlap or duplication. But we're able to get meals to kids, and any child 0 to 18 is eligible for that lunch. They come to a specific location Monday through Friday, and they get at least one meal for that day. This helps the families who are maybe struggling to expand their food budget dollars during the summer months, or if the kids are in a situation where the parents aren't home, but it's close to a location they can walk to safely, they get that meal. So the summer feeding program is really important, and it happens across the state. It happens for all of the school districts as a whole. And many, many great organizations are part of that summer feeding program.
And again, 1 in 6 Utah kids are in danger of missing a meal. Tell me about your mobile school pantry. This is, you know, you talked about the Kids Cafe and we talked about the summer feeding program. What's the mobile school pantry?
A mobile school pantry program has started for us in order to allow us to get to kids that are at a specific school. We have 72 different locations that we're serving throughout the state. On a set day once a month, we drive to that location with a special kind of truck. It's like a beverage truck, like a Coca-Cola truck where the doors open on the side. It's a smaller truck. We have an awning attached. Then working with the administrative staff of the school, the students could come down to the truck at the end of that specific day. And then they are greeted by volunteers who allow them to take a bag of food. We help them load their backpacks. We help them get ready to get that food either to the bus or on their walk home. And that once a month visit to the food pantry allows kids to have the feeling of helping the family. They're selecting the food. They're taking it home. They're sharing it with their family. the kids get to be part of the solution, not just part of the problem. So last year, we were able to reach about 456,000 clients through those 72 locations. We offer a sponsorship opportunity with each of those, and then whichever company wants to sponsor a specific school, their employees come and they're the volunteers that help us distribute the food. So it's kind of a win-win. It's educational to teach people. It's a great volunteer opportunity for corporations, but more importantly, it gets a great variety of food to those families once a month.
Yeah, it sounds like a great program. Tell me about the Food Box program.
Our Food Box program has been set up over the years to accommodate people who are homebound seniors or people with disabilities. We just recognize that there are folks who can't get to us but still need the help. We have intake workers who go and interview the person to make sure they qualify. If they do, they'll receive a box of food that's a variety of canned food, plus milk, cheese, eggs. If you have a pet, we provide pet food so you can keep your animal with you. And then we use volunteers to deliver them to the person at their home. So we did about 43,000 food boxes last year. And for a lot of these folks who are homebound, that volunteer bringing a food box sometimes is their only contact point with the outside world for the whole month. So we're delivering more than just food. We're delivering a little element of security to that person as well.
Yeah, it sounds like a great, not only physical needs, but emotional needs, right? One more service I wanted to highlight specifically, the mobile pantry program. You say you've served 754,000 individuals through this program. This goes to, I guess, what we call food deserts.
Exactly. And this is a situation we talked about a little earlier where a location or a neighborhood doesn't have a brick and mortar pantry. So we will find a location, we'll drive into a neighborhood with a truck full of food. Volunteers come to assist us. We place the food in a parking lot in an organized fashion. People will drive through. The food's placed in their car. This makes it so that people don't have to travel long distances to get to food. And if we find that over the course of time, the numbers dwindle and the neighborhood's becoming more self-sufficient, we can close that location and go to a different location. So these give us flexibility to take the product to the areas that have the highest need.
We're talking with Jeanette Bott, who is president and CEO of Utah Food Bank. And as we head toward another break here, I'll bring in Emily Colby. Thanks for joining me again.
Great to be on Access Utah with you.
So we've heard, all the many ways Utah Food Bank is helping families. And the statistics, again, 1 in 6 Utah children are at risk of missing a meal. 12% of the state's population are food insecure. So we're partnering with a couple of organizations to join our forces. The money comes to UPR, but you're helping a bunch of other people as well.
Yes, Post Consumer Brands has generously offered to donate 2 boxes of cereal to the Utah Food Bank for every donation that comes to Utah Public Radio this fall fund drive. That ends tomorrow at 7 p.m., so we need your donations now to help take full advantage of this generous offer from Post Consumer Brands. This will help feed hungry people and support Utah Public Radio at the same time. And I was just thinking, listening to this program, that so many of us feel sometimes so helpless in this world. You know, things can feel really intense. There's a lot of bad news all the time. This is such an excellent opportunity to help and to do something good, to feel empowered, to know that you can make a difference. You make a huge difference for Utah Public Radio and hungry families when you donate to Utah Public Radio right now. Your donation will help us be able to continue bringing you Access Utah, and it helps the Utah Food Bank and hungry people in our community. So you can do that right now at upr.org or give us a call, 800-826-1495. Make that donation.
So maybe you can come in at $15 a month.
$15 a month.
We love sustainers because the money comes in monthly. We can plan our budgets that way. If you come in at $15 a month, a lot of things will happen. You'll get the UPR hat. For one, that's pretty cool. And on top of that, your donation means 2 boxes of cereal go to the Utah Food Bank.
Absolutely. Now's the perfect time to give because, at that $15 a month level, Two boxes of cereal go into the Utah Food Bank, and you can pick up the UPR hat. It says defunded, not defeated. And that's really a mantra that we've taken to heart here at Utah Public Radio after losing federal funding. We may be defunded. We are certainly not defeated. And we need your help. We need your help to continue this service and to feed these hungry people, you know, thanks to this generous partnership with Post Consumer Brands. That $15 a month level, not a huge ask in your budget, but it makes a big difference for Utah Public Radio, especially that monthly part. We know we can really count on that money going forward as we're adjusting to this new reality.
Well, we're partnering. Post Consumer Brands providing the cereal that's going through Utah Public Radio and money coming to UPR to help us in this post-rescission world. $200,000 new gap that we'll have to fill. And then it's going, of course, to needy families through Utah Food Bank. So, Jeanette Bott, we talked about a UPR hat. I don't know if Utah Food Bank has, NPR and PBS stations are famous for their swag, their stuff. I don't know if Utah Food Bank has cool stuff like that. Obviously, the food goes out, right? That's the main thing.
Well, we're a little limited on our swag budget because our thought process is for the dollars we would spend on that, we can take that and convert it into meals for hungry kids. So, we're a little sparse when it comes to fun or fashionable things that would represent us.
So, yeah, all the more reason, give the money to UPR, get the cool hat. I'm being a little frivolous here, but of course the cereal goes to needy families through Utah Food Bank.
And you know, when you give to Utah Public Radio this hat, I mean, we really do make the best use of your dollars that we can. We know a lot of you love to wear this hat to represent Utah Public Radio. $15 a month, almost all of that is coming to Utah Public Radio. Very little going to the hat. And the Post Consumer Brands donation, that isn't taking any money out of your donation to Utah Public Radio. That's just a generous donation from the Post, that cereal on top of your donation.
So I might suggest give the money to UPR that causes boxes of cereal to go to the needy families through Utah Food Bank. Then so give the money there and then, give extra money to the Utah Food Bank or volunteer. I'm reading here. Utah Food Bank says last year we were beneficiaries of 183,000 volunteer hours, which replaces, we'd have to hire an additional 88 full-time employees. So a lot of good can be done. Jeanette Bott, tell me again how people can contact Utah Food Bank directly.
You know, it's very easy to do. You can visit utahfoodbank.org. Immediately, you'll see the three icons for food, time, or money. We also recently have acquired the Utah Diaper Bank, so there's an opportunity to purchase diapers as well.
All right. A lot of good can be done. First, go to upr.org or call 800-826-1495. And then certainly Utah Food Bank, very worthy of your time, your money, your, what is the third one?
Food.
Yeah. Well, of course. How could I forget? So a lot of good is being done right now and can be done. Let's do another break and we'll be back with our final segment with Utah Food Bank President and CEO Jeanette Bott. Thank you for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Utah Food Bank President and CEO Jeanette Bott on the program today. We're talking about food insecurity, the hunger cliff, services Utah Food Bank provides, and how to help. Again, a reminder, 1 in 6 Utah children are at risk of missing a meal today. 415,000 Utahns, the same. That equates to 12% of the state's population. A big lift there. So, Jeanette Bott, that's kind of where I want to go to next. Maybe on a personal level, how did you come to Utah Food Bank?
I've been involved with Utah Food Bank for 32 years, and it's been an interesting journey. My previous job, we did a lot of volunteer work in the community, and we partnered with the food bank in 1993 to start doing an annual food drive for them. And even though I have left that organization, they're still continuing and now 33 years into doing a food drive every year for us. So for me, it's the opportunity to have learned about the services and the umbrella services of Utah Food Bank. But, you know, many years ago when I was a young single mother, the community I lived in didn't have a pantry and there wasn't a battered women's shelter. There wasn't a place to really go for help. And so I think having gone through some experiences on my own, gives me a little element of compassion to the audience that we're serving now. I think I have a better understanding on how people want to be treated and the things they're experiencing. So combine that with the years of opportunity I've had to partner from perhaps a corporate point of view with the organization, plus some personal experiences that my children and I experienced. It helps me understand how important this work truly is.
I have some follow-up questions to that, but I was reading on the Utah Food Bank site, and I'm not sure what your history is, but you know, families can be going along just fine, and then something happens, right? The specific thing I was reading on the Utah Food Bank site was divorce. Divorce can be a huge factor, and a huge economic factor in a family, right? Or maybe you have a huge health event and have to, all your money is going to pay for healthcare. So I think everybody is vulnerable.
Well, and those situations are what we refer to as a family crisis. We all have them that happen to families at any point in time. We're an emergency food assistance program, so we are here to help you when that crisis pops up for you or your family.
So I guess back to you. Obviously, this kind of work would be meaningful, I would imagine, right? You're directly feeding families, directly meeting a big community need. But especially in today's world where federal funding's drying up, et cetera, there's got to be stresses on the other side.
You know, it is. It's frightening and it's frustrating and it is sometimes aggravating. But working together with great partners, with great donors, with the incredible staff that I am blessed to have surrounding me throughout the state, you know, we try to keep a positive note and recognize that we will adapt. You know, we went through this in COVID. COVID was really a difficult time for us. You know, everyone stopped volunteering and a lot of everyone was gone home from work and from school. It's like they're not coming to where the food is. How do we get the food to them? So, you know, looking at the next few years, I think we are going to have challenges. I am concerned about fundraising, and it's back to that same dollar that everyone's asking for. But we've really tried to prepare ourselves as an organization to be nimble, to really be prepared to analyze. And I think from COVID, the things we weren't prepared to do, we know what could happen again. So we're in a little bit more of a ready state to serve. But I think more than anything at all, we recognize how important the mission is. Regardless of what happens, people around us are going to be hungry. Our goal is to do the best we can, utilizing our expertise and those of the partner agencies we serve to get food to those who are struggling. And we've really tried to position ourselves to be ready to adapt, and that's what we have to do.
I want to have you follow up on COVID. All of us, you know, these were, in many cases, problems we've never faced before. And so a lot of lessons learned. What are the top lessons Utah Food Bank has learned here from COVID?
You know, the thing that we really, really, I think, took for granted for a period of time, because it was just such a natural thing, were our volunteers. People came, they were here every day, they were helping hands, so we had big projects, the volunteers helped us. And then all of a sudden, almost overnight, that ended. We didn't realize, I think, how valuable the time and dedication of others was to us as an organization. It humbled us immediately. The flip side of that was some of our programs that we had to discontinue. We were able to take the staff we were utilizing for those, and instead of having layoffs or letting people go, we put those into the roles the volunteers had been doing, and we were able to continue with the process we had to meet to be ready to distribute food. So when I say adapt, trust me, that comes from history. We were able to do that. But the lessons learned were never take advantage or remember to be appreciative and don't ever take advantage of the thought process people go through to decide to volunteer for you. We have a whole new appreciation for people that have helped us, whether it's a monetary donation, volunteer, or the food that they donate to us from their home pantries.
Well, we're nearing the end of the program. We want to one more time give people the opportunity to support Utah Public Radio and at the same time support Utah Food Bank. Emily Colby joins me again.
It's great to be on Access Utah with you, Tom. Today is a great day to give to Utah Public Radio, second to last day of our fall fund drive. So the urgency is ratcheting up here even more so. We have lost federal funding. We've been talking about that. You've been hearing us talk about that. So now is a great time to give. We are coming to you. We really need your support right now.
Here's how you can help. Go to upr.org, upr.org, or call 800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. Donation in any amount today will cause two boxes of cereal from Post Consumer Brands to go to the Utah Food Bank. And we've been talking all hour about the need. So there's a bit of some help you can give. Courtesy of Post Consumer Brands and Utah Food Bank. And the money comes to Utah Public Radio to, of course, continue this great program.
You've heard about the need Utah Food Bank has. Utah Public Radio, you're listening right now. You value Access Utah, all the other wonderful programs you hear on the radio. Well, these are not free to produce, so you're able to listen for free. We love to bring this service, make it accessible to everyone, but it's only available because some people do pay for it. Some people are willing to pitch in and donate to Utah Public Radio, and we're asking you to be one of them. Join our community of supporters, be a Utah Public Radio sustainer, make a monthly donation, and you can feel good knowing that this service is made possible because of you.
Now, maybe you've listened for years. Maybe you've listened for a long time and have never, kicked in and responded, given a donation. We're very glad you're listening. Just want to express the urgency here. We've lost federal funding. That's $200,000 a year, 15% of our budget that we have to make up every year. So won't you consider making that big, important step right now while you're thinking about it? Become a member of Utah Public Radio.
Do it right now, 800-826-1495 or upr.org, upr.org. Make that donation. If you've never donated to Utah Public Radio before, we are talking to you. We need you so much. We've never needed you more. And you can help so much right now when you make your gift. Whatever amount fits in your budget, we hope you do something monthly, but whatever amount works for you right now, please make that donation. It is so critical to keeping this station on the air. upr.org, 800-826-1495. Give now.
So Jeanette Bott, one more time, how can people help Utah Food Bank?
You know, they can go to utahfoodbank.org. Our webpage is very informative. It gives you options of how you can help us, whether it's that food, time, or money that we always ask for. But more importantly, we have to say thank you to UPR and our friends at Posts. It's the partnerships and the relationships we have across the state, both for you and for me, that will really help us do what we need to do to improve our communities. And so, you know, thank you to your listeners in advance for the help they're going to lend to help us all get through this relatively difficult time.
Well, Jeanette Bott, President and CEO of Utah Food Bank, has been with us. Thanks for all the good you do. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.
Recording stopped.
Scott Watcher, Leo T. here. As we move fastly into the fall and as we evolve in many ways, community and public radio and television stations lead the way. In fact, they're in many times the only way of keeping citizens aware of what is going on around them in many facets, from their state legislatures to corporate expansion to the federal government that affects all of us in our communities and our country. This communication and engagement is necessary to keep dialogues open with the people of all cultures and backgrounds. UPR at Utah State University in Logan is key. Tom Williams of Access Utah, the interviews with people from all jumps of life, is very important to keep this dialogue vital. And Leo T. Skywatcher reports space exploration of the moon, Mars, Jupiter, and possibilities that scientists are exploring of life in other solar systems. So you want to keep public radio alive by donating. Push the button at upr.org and donate now. Keep public radio alive in Utah.